I'm Stargate Pioneer from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the GunnaGeek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. My name is Joe Burke, and welcome to episode number 27 of PopX Cast. Oh my gosh, we are so excited. We got Suicide Squad this week, and we got my man, Mr. Austin Burke. What's up, man? What's going on, dude?
What is going on, Joe? I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy to talk about some more DC movies.
DC movies, yes, yes, yes. We have a lot to talk about Suicide Squad. A lot of good, a lot of good. And we got some critiquing that's going on. But, you know, I think that DC's definitely going in the right direction with Suicide Squad. But we'll unpack that later on. And that was for you, Cliff Buttonvisor, if you're watching. But hey, guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I am your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast.
Mm-hmm. And I am Austin Burke, your Appalachian geek at heart. If you missed last week's episode 26, where we interviewed Enrique Bentecourt from Neoverse, be sure to head over to Google Play and or iTunes. Click that subscribe. While you're there, leave us a glowing and beautiful 5-star rating and review. We certainly appreciate it. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, man, I tell you what, so much is going on this week in the world of news. And before we do that, we're just going to cue up the old news music here. So everyone stay tuned. The news is coming up. PopX News. Oh my gosh.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News. Coming to you live. Right here on PopXcast.com.
All right, so Suicide Squad this week, leading at the top of our news list, breaks the August record for a Thursday night opening at 20.5 million. And it had an opening day of 65 million with a total of 267 million worldwide. It seems to be a good opening weekend for a movie that received very, and we'll get to this later, lackluster reviews over on Rotten Tomatoes, which I don't know what that's all about. But I think that Suicide Squad this week, we've seen it for the past 2 months. It's been in our face. And you haven't been able to turn on TV or watch a show on television or on the CW, what you haven't seen a Suicide Squad commercial. Or if you've been on the internet browsing, you've seen a Suicide Squad ad or trailer or something. So, and so I think that's probably a trickle down effect from all the advertising and just the marketing that they put in on this.
Sure.
But you're up in Austin. What's going on? We've got more Suicide Squad news here.
Yeah, I think the marketing for Suicide Squad has been absolutely fantastic. Here's something that's kind of sad. It will not be released in China due to media regulation because of the level of violence and the dark tone. So that's when we're talking about box office.
So media, due to media regulation.
Yeah.
What
same
is that?
Thing with Deadpool.
What does that mean?
Deadpool was the same way. They would not release in China, and that took away from its final box office run.
So basically, where it's a dark film, it's got violence and darkness, and China just says, no, we don't want that. So, okay.
Yeah.
All righty then. All right. Well, you know, that's, I guess,
that sucks.
I have nothing for that. I don't know what to say to that. Anyway, the producer for Deadpool number 2 says that it will make fun of other DC and Marvel movies in only a way that Deadpool can. And I just can't imagine what Deadpool 2. And we already know that Cable is going to be a part of it. We don't know who Cable is yet. We know that they're starting filming in, if I'm not mistaken, March in Quebec. Or is it Alberta? Alberta, Canada. One of the, it's one of the Canadian cities where they filmed Deadpool 1. They're actually going to be going back and filming again there as well. So it's really awesome. March 2017 film starts for Deadpool 2, and we should have the movie by 2018. So that's going to be awesome.
Ah, that is so exciting. That is so exciting. You know, there's a lot of new Marvel and DC movies coming down the pipeline. A new quote from James Gunn confirmed that Stan Lee is going to have a cameo in another anticipated Marvel film, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Of course he is.
Of course he is. Now, was Stan Lee in Guardians 1? Did he make a cameo in Guardians 1? Because I don't remember.
No, yeah, he did. Okay, he did. When Rocket and Groot were near that water fountain, when they first meet up,
yes.
And Rocket's got that
yes.
thing on his
okay.
eye, and he's looking around, and he sees the old man, and he's making fun of him.
Okay. Excuse me while I have a sip from my Suicide Squad cup.
Oh, dude.
I know.
Come
it's,
on.
It's pretty bad, isn't it? I'm sorry.
Come on. I have label-less water.
Oh, my gosh. And you don't even have a label on it? How bad are things in Kentucky that they don't even give you labels on your bottles?
Nothing tastes better than not being sued, Joe.
Okay. So, you non-labeled crazy you. So we have some interesting news. Supergirl has cast Katie McGrath as Lena Luthor for season 2. Ooh. So cool. Lena Luthor, is this the daughter, or is Lena the daughter of Lex?
Or the wife? I don't know if it's the daughter or the sister. It may be the sister. I'm not sure.
I don't know much about Lena. If there's anybody in the chat room that maybe can correct us on the tidbits of Lena Luthor, we would love to know. All right, anyway.
In other Supergirl news, set photos have been released for season 2, showing that she may be heading to Metropolis and also the Luthor Corp building. So that is very exciting. We have a lot of Lex Luthor in this season, it seems like.
Look at that. Look at that Lex Corp logo there. That's pretty cool. A new beginning.
That's
interesting.
Cool.
Obviously, there's no tie-in with logos and branding from Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice versus the CW DC universe, I've still got a beef to pick about with that. I was like, man, why can't they just cross-brand everything like Marvel does with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and their cinematic universe? No, we want Grant Gustin on TV, and we want this other guy to play him on that. Whatever, DC. Oh, my gosh. I get off my soapbox eventually, I promise. But I digress. Moving on. Disney-owned ABC and Lucasfilm are just having a conversation, quote-unquote. They are just having a conversation about a possible Star Wars television show. Now, we previously touched on this back in episode 25, but it seems that the ball is starting to make some motion in the right direction. So we do know that ABC is co-partnered and co-owned by Walt Disney. And so we'll see. We'll see where it goes. It will be kind of cool.
I'm very divided on this because on one hand, it would be great to see Star Wars on television. But on another hand, a Star Wars Netflix series. No restrictions. You can go full dark. Think about maybe Old Republic storyline, something like that. Oh, I would love to see a Star Wars Netflix series.
Does anybody ever watch ABC anymore?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I had to throw that out there. What is ABC? Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I'm so bad. I'm in weird mood tonight. Moving on with the news here. We have so much amazing news.
From Star Wars.
To DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah. They have cast Matthew McCall as Commander Steel as a member of the Justice Society of America. We're getting traction on this JSA thing, man. I'm really excited.
Wow. Do you know much about Commander Steel?
I know a little bit. I know that I don't know a ton. And you know, they're going to change his character like they always do from the comics to the TV series. Yeah. But apparently, he's a, and it'll be fun to see how they do him on screen.
Yeah, it'll be fun. He's basically kind of like a patriotic superhero in a way. I honestly don't know. See, I when I was a child, I dove more into the Marvel universe as I did, and I'm just now catching up on a lot of the DC stuff. So Commander Steel is kind of, I don't know much about him, and I know that's probably boo on us as PopX cast. We should know our stuff, but actually, I don't know that much about Commander Steel. But we'll touch on that later. But anyway, moving on with the news. Michael Bay this week has releases his first look at Hot Rod. Oh, look at that. Look at a Hot Rod, dude. That's nice. And we've got our first look at Drift. Oh, look at Drift Samurai. Nice. Dig it. It makes, yeah, see the logo. And we also have Squeaks. They are all coming up. Okay, Squeaks kind of looks like out of the Star Wars universe, I think. And he's a moped. Oh, that's really cool. And that's going to be in the upcoming Transformers The Last Night. So they're heavy into production on that right now. So interesting to see how much more that Michael Bay can butcher up the entire Star Transformers franchise. But I digress.
Oh my goodness!
Yes.
No, that's
can true. You say cash cow? Can you say cash cow? The only reason he's doing this now is because he's making crap loads of money.
Oh yeah. See, but that's the thing. I see the pictures. I watch the trailers. I'm like, oh, that could be cool. He's not going to mess it up for a fifth of some time.
Yeah.
He does. Okay, moving on to Resident Evil. Resident Evil. The trailer, the final chapter, will be released on August 9th, with the film scheduled release on January 27th, 2017, concluding, finally, the end of the franchise.
There was a beginning? No, I'm just messing with you. Wow, this... it's just crazy that this went on this long. It's kind of like one of them films that you just kind of expected would drop off the face of the map after part two, but somehow we have, what, four or five in this movie franchise? I don't know. Well, from Resident Evil to The Walking Dead, Season 7 has the crew heading to a beach just off Jekyll Island, Georgia, for shots that will be filmed in open water. So this the team with Rick Grimes and crew will actually have zombies in open water. That'll be interesting. So yeah, that is
cool.
That is
cool. Something we've not seen a lot of water, Joe.
Well, in Fear the Walking Dead, we've seen it with the boat scene in season 2. But we've not seen it with Rick Grimes and his crew.
That'll be fun. That'll be a lot of fun. You know what else is fun, Joe?
What's that, man?
Star Wars Rogue One. And they're going to reveal the new U-Wing vehicle in the upcoming Star Wars story. Let's see how
this works. A U-Wing? Interesting.
Oh, look at that.
That's kind of cool.
Look at that. Oh. Anything new in Star Wars canon, I get excited about.
Let me pause. I want to pause the news right here for a second. Let's talk about Star Wars Rogue One. Are you excited? Are you on the fence? Where are you with this, Austin?
I mean, obviously, I'm wearing a Star Wars shirt, but I'm really excited for Rogue One. But there's a lot of news that's came out in the last couple of weeks about, you know, the director having problems bringing in people to help direct, and now reports are coming out that maybe he didn't even have that much to do with the reshoots and the final script. It's like, you know, at first the reshoots, I was like, every movie has reshoots, but now that all this stuff's coming out, it's like, I have faith. I have faith, but it's, do they know exactly where they're going with this or what?
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, and they've already talked about doing kind of a, I don't know, we've reported on it about the Han Solo miniseries that they've been talking about doing and all that stuff, so I just hope they don't. Yeah. I mean, don't oversaturate the market. Just because Disney owns the rights to Lucasfilm and the entire Star Wars anthology and the history of Star Wars doesn't give them the right to just kind of start butchering up historic. I don't know.
Great.
I'm a little old school on that. So I'll just leave that nugget there for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. You never know. You never know.
Also, this was kind of interesting news this week as we're starting. We got just a couple more news bits here to round up. On August the 3rd, there was a petition that started over on change.org to shut down Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes. This is so funny, man. This petition would not have shut down the site, but to deliver a message to critics that was a lot of people to disagree with the reviews, particularly on the DC franchise. But at one point, the petition reached over 17,000 signatures, and the petition obviously was withdrawn. As Austin just shakes his head, what is your thought about this, Austin?
Jeez, man. Listen, the thing about Rotten Tomatoes is Rotten Tomatoes doesn't give a review. It's an amalgamation of so many different people giving their reviews. Yeah. So if they're wanting to shut down the site, that does absolutely nothing because these people's reviews are still going to come out and they're still going to be what they are. And here's the thing. Warner Brothers owns Rotten Tomatoes. Warner Brothers owns DC.
That's pretty cut and dry. And, you know, I've come to one agreement, Austin, with Rotten Tomatoes. Do you know what that is?
What is it?
Rotten Tomatoes is kind of like a hemorrhoid. You can put a little cream on it, and the pain will go away. But it's always going to be there. So that's the way I look at Rotten Tomatoes. And you know what? You can quote me on that.
Oh, that's amazing.
All right. Austin, what's our last news of the week? I can't help it.
Captain Marvel is still about 3 years away. But Brie Larson has tweeted out a pic of her getting into her research of Carol Danvers. Brie Larson is a phenomenal actress, and I'm so excited to see her play Captain Marvel.
Look at that. She's diving into... Oh, man. That's how you do it. You read about the books. You understand the character. She's doing it while she does best. And so that wraps up this week's news segment. We'll be right back. We got some cool nerd nuggets. Don't go nowhere.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, we got Miss Lindsay Badger joining us right here for this week's Nerd Nugget. Now let's play that beautiful Nerd Nugget music as Lindsay Badger slowly prepares to unleash upon us four amazing nuggets. We don't get one. We don't get two. But ladies and gentlemen, this week we are blessed with three Nerd Nuggets.
Oh my God, it's a Nerd Nugget.
Go for it, Lindsay Badger.
Oh. All right. Lindsay Badger in the house. I'm your Midwestern Okie geek at heart, and here is this week's Nerd Nugget.
Awesome.
Lots of fans mistakenly think that the Suicide Squad was a relatively modern addition to comics, and that's understandable as it's the new 52 version of the team with which most of the people are familiar. But the squad has been around for almost 60 years, first appearing in 1959 in The Brave and the Bold, Volume 1, Number 25.
Wow.
So that's a little throwback nugget for you guys.
Wow, 1959.
That is the original source of where this little thing festered.
The Brave and the Bold, The Suicide.
Yes.
All right, cool.
Well, there's a really kind of neat thing about this movie coming out right whenever it did. The movie was released on the 50th anniversary of the Joker's live-action debut by Cesar Romero in both The Batman and The Batman the Movie in 1966.
Wow. Oh, my.
That's cool.
That is awesome. I did not know that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So this is the 50th anniversary of the Joker.
Anniversary of our, well, it's one of my favorite villains.
He's everybody's favorite.
It's one of my favorite villains for sure.
Oh yeah.
And then last but not least, Batfleck. Ben Affleck is the very first actor to portray Batman in two movies helmed by two different directors. And he's also the first actor to portray Batman in two different movies within the same year. So he's breaking some Batman records.
I think he just pulled a Robert Downey Jr.
That's awesome.
So, there you go. He's got a little trophy.
I don't call him Ben Affleck, though. I call him Batfleck.
Batfleck, exactly.
I mean, this is the only way to do it. Lindsay Badger, well, you going to hang out with us for the remainder of this Suicide Squad?
I would love
squad?
To hang out and awesome. Hear what you guys have to think about the movie. Because right. I got to see the movie this weekend, too, you guys.
I saw your Instagrams over on the interwebs. So.
Yes.
All right, so the Lindsay Badger completing up our Nerd Nuggets.
Oh, my God, it's a Nerd Nugget.
And we are going to roll into the spoiler alert. And we're going to roll that music. And beyond this point, if you've not seen Suicide Squad, you have been properly forewarned. In 3, 2, 1.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right. That is our spoiler alert. Music, and all right, so we're going to actually openly discuss it right now. So we're going to have spoilers and finales and villains and character developments, the whole nine yards coming to you right now.
Let it rip.
All right, now I am going to actually this time, now I usually will open up with my own conversation, but this time I'm actually going to turn the conversation to Austin. I want Austin to share his likes and dislikes. There can you open go. It up for us, Austin?
Okay. I can do it, man. I got to check out Suicide Squad on opening day, Thursday night. I watched it with my girlfriend and a few buddies of ours. And I went in extremely hopeful because the marketing for this film is absolutely incredible. And I was pumped to see this. And apparently a lot of other people were because it's making a lot of money. Now, was I... Okay. Let's do this. Okay. Walking out of this film, I had a lot of positives, okay? A lot of good things were in the film, and I'll go ahead and those off right now because we can get to the negatives later. First off, my favorite part of the film was something that's very general itself, the Suicide Squad within the Suicide Squad. Okay. I loved all of the characters. I loved their dynamics. I loved the way the team worked. I want to see sequel after sequel after sequel, and I want DC to continue to do this team justice because I loved the Suicide Squad itself. Now, my two favorite performances, and one of these guys, this is a spoiler episode, so one of these guys, Joker, was not in the movie very much. He was only in the movie for about 10 minutes. But Joker and Harley, their dynamic was absolutely amazing. I loved everything about their relationship. I loved all of the scenes that they shared together. I loved the flashback scenes. I love the scene where Joker pushes Harley falls into the vat. That whole scene had me captivated. Everything about that worked. Certain flashbacks, not every flashbacks, really, really worked for me. And I think all of the actors played their parts well within the flashback and within the context of the movie. I also like how Will Smith, and usually going into a movie, Will Smith's and I'm like, okay, he's going to overshadow all the other actors because he's got a little bit of big-headedness. Now, I love, but he does like to be the guy in charge. But to me, he didn't really do that in this film. He was very calm. He was collected. He played the role well. And I really want to see Deadshot in another Batman movie. Mm-hmm. I really do because, to me, he was the embodiment of what Deadshot is in the comics. I also really enjoyed certain action sequences. I'll stick with Deadshot. Deadshot's action sequence where he's in on top of the car shooting, just not missing, because the guy doesn't miss. Mm-hmm. He's like Hawkeye with incredible. That was my favorite action scene. Phenomenal. And then the very last, this was the scene in the middle of the credits, was great. The scene, and we'll get into it later, I'm sure, the scene with Ben Affleck and Amanda Waller, mm-hmm. who also did both the use of Batman and the use of Amanda Waller in the movie, to me, was great. So those are my Suicide Squad. A lot to like in the film. And I liked enough in the film to say that I would give the movie a fresh review. But the movie is not without its flaws to me. Now, everybody feels differently about this movie.
Before you go into your flaws, let me stop you there, because we're gonna keep the momentum of the likes part going. I want to focus on that. So we're going to come back to the dislike section. Lindsay Badger, before I give mine, do you want to share anything about your likes of the movie?
Let's see. My number one wow factor was actually whenever Diablo went full Monty towards the end, the climax of the movie, whenever he went and he was all like wild hair, fire, everything. That was just like,
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That was my number one wow factor of the movie. Harley Quinn was okay. She was more of the eye candy that gets guys all excited to watch the movie. Her character in general, I was just kind of meh about. But I did like her personality, and she kind of, she was the crossover between the two storylines. So that was kind of cool how she kind of went back and forth on that. It was a really enjoyable movie. It wasn't really it was my best movie I've ever seen, but I liked a lot of the graphics and the special effects that they used for the witch with all the spells.
The Enchantress, yes.
Yeah,
the
Enchantress. And all that.
The reason why I asked Lindsay to share, because, you know, Austin and I.
Austin.
I'll get it out in a minute. Hi. How are you doing?
What's your name?
My name's Henry.
Let me check the show notes
Austin Perkins. But Austin and I we've read some of the comics, and we kind of have a little bit of the know, whereas Lindsay, I would say consider her more of the introductory level of a film reviewer. So that's why I want you to share your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to share some of my likes, and then we'll get back to Austin with his dislikes.
Yeah.
So I love the Joker and Harley Quinn's interactions, their dynamics together, especially some of their flashback scenes. It was just truly amazing with, the purple Lamborghini, which was just amazing. It was cool. It was hip. It was modern. It was of this era and not in like, it's like you think of Gotham like on Fox, it's supposed to look like it's in the 50s, but it's still a modern age.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't know what era it's from.
Yeah.
You know, this is a DC product that knows what era it's from. And I like that. And I'm also kind of glad, much like what Austin had talked about earlier, I'm kind of glad that Will Smith didn't foreshadow this whole movie.
Yeah,
because we all know, I've seen a lot of his other movies where he's either a supporting actor or whatever, and he just comes back in and he's also kind of like starting to take on the more of a lead role when he shouldn't be, and so he can take over that dynamic really quickly because that's just the kind of personality that he is. Mm-hmm. But it was nice having him in there as a supporting role rather than a lead. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool seeing Will Smith kind of take a step back and just let the character be in this film. That was cool, and that shows class. And I'm actually really, really loved Jared Leto's Joker. I really liked his portrayal. Despite the reviews that I've been reading online, specifically one this weekend that came in from the Huffington Post Entertainment that said, the main reason why Jared Leto's Joker didn't work in Suicide Squad. Really, Huffington Post? You're going to throw an actor under the bus for giving it his all in one of his most breakout roles that he's done in the comic book franchise? I would say to Huffington Post, shame on you. And I would say to all the critics at this is coming from me. Now, this is why we have a disclaimer. The views expressed in PopX are ours and not yours. And Rotten Tomatoes critics, some of you guys need to pick up and read a frickin' comic book before you write a review. Can I get an amen? Okay. So, now.
Yes, sir.
Moving on, I did love Jared Leto's Joker, though, and I thought he did an amazing job. His laugh was demonic. He kind of had a little bit of a Mark Hamill Rusk in there with some of his lower laughs. I enjoyed that. And I love the hero part of this, of the Justice League tie-in with the film, as it's kind of like teasing and setting up some of the intricate parts of the Justice League film coming out next year. I really enjoyed that, like the quick cameos from The Flash and the cameo of Batman on top of the Lamborghini chasing down Harley Quinn, and then Batman putting away Boomerang, and just all these other characters, that Batman's a part of, stories that we know and we've seen in the animated series, we've read them in the comic books, and we're seeing them come out now in a live action. I really loved the tie-in with that. So now, Austin, what is your dislikes?
Joe, I love what you said to dislikes. The comic book aspects, not the film, not film-wise, but the comic book aspects of this movie were fantastic. I feel like this is the most comic booky of the DC movies, and I feel like they got the most right mm-hmm. of any of the DC movies when it comes to the characters, how they should be portrayed, and their backstories. So most of my negatives do have to do with the actual film. Okay? And my first negative is this. I know a lot of use of the music. I didn't. I thought the music in the beginning of the movie, and specifically during a lot of the character intros and stuff, I thought it was very choppy. I thought it took me out of some... Now, there were two or three songs that I thought were used very well, but the majority took me out of the movie. They were too on the nose, and I'm pretty sure the studio just saw the trailers, and they were like, wow, you're responding to these trailers. So they went back in over David Ayer's head. This is what I feel like, because I don't think David Ayer wanted these songs in there because some of them didn't work in context. Mm-hmm. I feel like the studio went in, threw those songs in at the last second, boom, 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 got 15 songs in the first few minutes. For me, it just didn't work. I would have much rather had a score, and that leads into something else that kind of bothered me. The editing. I thought some of the editing really worked, like how some of the flashback scenes were incorporated, but I thought some of the editing just did not work. It would cut from one thing to another, and especially at the beginning, some of the character intros were good, but just the way that they went from scene to scene for me, and some of the flashy stuff was good, but some of the flashy stuff, like the scene where Jared Leto is holding the thing above Harley's head, and it's showing, you know, him getting ready to do whatever he's going to do to her, I would have loved to have seen maybe a 5 to 6 minute version of that instead of the 23 seconds that we got of that whole big montage. There could have been a lot of character development there. And I would, mm-hmm. honestly, I would just see a movie between Harley and Joker. That would be great. Yeah. We're not talking about that right now. And I also felt like the movie was too fast times. I thought it needed to let the characters breathe a little bit more. Certain characters, Joe, and I know you feel kind of the same way that I do, Katana, Croc, God, Slipknot, good Lord, why was he in this film? I know why he was in it. I get it. But at least give him
he was
intro.
In this film to die in this film.
Slipknot in intro. It was very, very obvious that you were going to kill him off. Okay, yeah. I know as comic book fans, that somebody's expendable, it's going to be Slipknot. But for the average viewer, when you don't, the only guy you don't give the intro, and they're like, oh yeah, that's Slipknot. That guy right there, he's Slipknot. It's like, hey, well, they're going to kill him. It's pretty obvious that they're
he's kind of like
him.
On Star Trek. Yeah, whenever you saw a Star Trek episode, you saw the guys that wore the red vest. You always knew that the red vest were going to be the ones that die on Star Trek. Well, this is the guy that dies on this episode. So.
He was absolutely the guy with the red shirt, okay? 100%. And it was very obvious to everybody. That really bothered me. But I also thought Katana, Croc, some of the characters... they were not flashed out. They were given nothing to do. They were kind of pointless. They were just there to make the team bigger than what it was, you know? And now we get to the ending, okay, the villain. The Enchantress was fine at the beginning, but as the movie went on, at the main end when she's doing the hula dance the whole time, I didn't like that. I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the way they portrayed her. I didn't like her. I didn't like her brother. I thought her brother was one of the worst villains/side villains in the film. I compare him to the villain in Thor the Dark World and Doctor Doom in 2015's Fantastic Four. The villain was absolutely terrible. I hated the villain, and I hated Enchantress at the main end, okay? But I still thought the way that the characters handled the final battle and the way that the characters acted in the final battle worked. It's mm-hmm. just the surrounding the scene that they were in.
Right.
It didn't work for me, and it threw me off. And I was the battle. I was just ready for the movie to be over. I was like, I'm done with this. The third act really, really took me out of the movie. And up until that point, especially the second act of the film, I dug the second act so much because we these really, really, you know, these scenes where they're vulnerable and they're coming together as a team and they're talking. And we got character development going on, and they're responding well as a group. Those were the parts of the movie that really, really worked for me. And it's one of the reasons that I can walk out of the movie and say, this is a really fun movie, and no matter how bad I didn't like the villain, the scenes that worked for me, really, as a DC fan, really, really worked. So, yeah that's all I got to say.
Well... Lindsay Badger, you got anything that you want to share on your dislikes list? Or
there's just to reiterate basically a lot of the things that Austin just said. I think the editing is probably what affected me the most, is it felt like there was literally two movies shoved together. There was Harley and Mr. J, and then there was the Suicide Squad over here on the side. Mm-hmm. And they were just kind of like being shoved in the same timeline. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm over here, and then I'm over here, and I'm like, can we just like separate these two a little bit more? I love that they tried to pull in the Joker because he's popular, and I think that's the reason why they tried to focus a lot on that. And then they're just trying to introduce a new idea with the Suicide Squad and merge these two together. And the editing, I think, is really what kind of made that a little awkward. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just kind of awkward. We're like, hi, guys. We're all sitting here in the same space kind of feeling. And then to the throwing in the Enchantress' brother was kind of random. Just kind of the intro of him was really, it felt really quick paced, and then he just kind of was there to save her butt, and then he was done. He was seemed kind of like a little bit of a waste of time for me. Again, with introducing some of the characters, especially Slipknot, he was a joke. He was basically just there to be blown up, and set an example of. The constant dangling of the, if you don't behave, I'm going to blow you up, through the whole movie was really annoying for me. You could have just done that like once. But it's like, you guys, we have to be good or we're going to explode over and over and over again. It's like, oh my God, please stop.
I agree with you. That was really overused a lot. And I mean, the little microchip in the neck. You get out of line, I'll explode it. Boom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Katana. I know she's part of the squad, but she just like, oh, hey, I'm on the squad, guys. I just showed up in the chopper.
Yep.
What's up?
Yeah.
I have no.
Where did she come from?
And then you don't even really get any real background story until they're right about to kill the boss and she's praying to the freaking sword thing. And I'm like, what's going on here? This lady's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
And that's about it for Katana. And we were like, okay, that's just a filler. She does some really cool tricks, but that's about it. It was really, you know, you go really deep into Deadshot, you go really deep into Harley, and then there's barely touching on the other ones. The only thing you know about the boomerang guy is that he robbed a bank, but it's like, why is he here?
Yeah.
So I think we could have organized that a little bit better and balanced the intros a bit more. There was definitely some things that could have worked on, but it was all right.
All right. So for me, I have three major dislikes. I want to say hello to Chris Farrell over in the chat room and Q joining us right now.
Oh,
hey, Q, what's going on? But now here's I've kind of narrowed down my dislikes in just a list of three. So I'll make this easy peasy for you, and it's not too complex. It's not too too diverse. But I don't know why the character and Austin hit on this, and so did Lindsay. Why did the director only flesh out certain members of the Suicide Squad and leave others without a full backstory? For example, you've already said it, Killer Croc. And we know Katana is from Arrow. Katana is on Arrow.
Yeah.
We've seen her. We kind of know.
Katana
already
is on Arrow, so I knew her backstory from that show. But if somebody
but if you've not
seen
Arrow,
before,
you don't know even know who Katana is. Mm-hmm. And also, Rick Flag is kind of a character that I think has
totally a left field.
He's just
me.
Literally dropped into it, and he's kind of the leader of the Suicide Squad. But who is Rick Flag? You know,
honestly,
I mean,
the only thing I took from that, sorry to interrupt you, the only thing I took from that is, oh, he's sleeping with the bad guy and we need a villain for the movie. So we're just going to throw him in on the good guy side. Yeah. So there's a conflict.
Well, for me, it kind of felt like the DC wanted him to come as like be a Nick Fury character.
Okay.
You know how Nick Fury or Agent Coulson kind of leads the group? Well, he's kind of the leader of the anti-hero. And so, and like you said, you know, oh, and by the way, he's sleeping with the Enchantress, so that, you know, we'll throw that out there.
I think he's one of the very few characters that I really didn't have a background knowledge on. So when for just coming into there knowing nothing about him, I was just like, this guy is a soldier?
Well,
that's about
Rick it. Rick Flagg's been around in DC Comics since the 50s. I mean, he's been an iconic leader. But, you know, without any proper introduction, not even prior to the CW or any of the mm-hmm. previous shows, we have no inclination who the heck Rick Flag mm-hmm. is. So much like Captain Steel, or what is it, Commander Steel, we don't know who he is. Unless you've read the comics, you know. My number two one is that there was rumors of cut scenes that have been confirmed by the producers yet again. Another DC movie has been spliced and chopped up with more footage shot and removed before the film's release. And it was reported that over 22 scenes were removed, many with the Joker was deleted from the final theatrical cut. Now, will we get an ultimate edition of this as well? Probably. Because there are scenes that Jared Leto filmed this when they are in the subway. And I've actually seen a snippet of this. It's on YouTube if you find it. But Jared Leto's Joker comes into the subway scene at the end of the movie when they're all down in the lower area. And he comes in and half of his face is burned from the helicopter crash.
Oh.
It's really cool. And it kind of sets up a dynamic that he is still alive. And he throws out a grenade to make his quick escape away from the Suicide Squad. So there's some key pivotal moments about the film that
would have been a good one to keep in, because that was kind of left hanging on the results.
That would have been
a
good one.
And then he's just like, oh, hey,
here. Then he just pops up in the cell when Harley Quinn's sipping on her tea at the end, and it's like, oh, you're alive.
He had Joker at the end.
Yeah.
He had Joker written on his shirt.
Yeah.
See? He did. It was
just
funny.
Just imagine him calling the person making that shirt, like, write Joker on this for me.
Can you write Joker here? That'd be great. Here's another one, too. This is my last bomb. I'm not sure why the Enchantress's brother was needed in the movie.
He was.
And so, since the Enchantress herself is the main villain, I've got to be honest, it was kind of a waste of CGI. And it reminded me a lot of the Destroyer from Thor Part 1 when he came down and demolished the entire city. I mean, basically, it was like the Destroyer with an Egyptian CGI face. That's all it was. You've seen Thor 1, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The big metal Destroyer thing that comes down and levels the entire city in Thor 1. Mm-hmm. It's kind of felt like that. It kind of felt like... but on a very scaled back. I mean, the role of this sub-villain was honestly not needed. I mean, I think the Enchantress could have cast some form of spell that would have encapsulated the city, and there would have been no need for him. And by the way, if you've read your comics, Enchantress's brother is Incubus, and she is Succubus in the actual comics of DC. And so in the comics, if you've read Incubus and Succubus, they do mate. And they are brother and sister, and it is incest, and they do form a symbiote, which is a subspecies demigod. And that's a long story for another day, but I understand the PG-13 movie, you don't want to have incest in there, so that's why you didn't see that scene.
No.
But it's a little nerd nugget for you. But overall, I think that he was truly a waste of a character. There was no need for him, and it was just really... I think that if they would have just focused on the Enchantress and her abilities and her real powers and just how amazing that she can be.
Here's a question for you. Just play the what-if game. If they were to take him out, how would she get around the whole, the heart controls her and she's trying to,
I think that's why he was in the movie.
That's
the reason.
That was the
way around him.
The brother?
Yeah, the brother was the only reason how she could get around the heart control thing.
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, even the Amanda Waller's group could have, I mean, they had the heart. And the only way that she was able to get the heart was through her brother. Yeah. Well, I mean, they could have used a different antagonist for that role. They could have used her boyfriend.
They could have
used Rick Flagg.
Absolutely.
As like, Rick, I love you. Can you go get me my heart? It's the only way I can live and survive. And boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
You know, it would have been.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different ways.
Anyway,
it's done.
It's on film. Anyway, I'm done with that. So, all right. So that is kind of our likes and dislikes about the film. Now, I didn't give a proper review over on PopXcast.com, but if I was going to rate this film on a 1 to 10, I would give it in the realm of about a 7.3, maybe? About a 7.3, maybe 7.2, roughly. So, Austin, what would you what would you say?
I would rate it a 6. I would rate it a solid 6. Now, I need to go back and see it again because, and a 6 is, of course, on Rotten Tomatoes. I need to go back and see it again because I feel like if I go back not just time and I block out all of the noise about how the film was made and stuff, I feel like I'm going to get more out of it. But as of right now, I'm going to say a 6 out of 10.
Cool. Lindsay, what do you think?
I'd probably do an even 7.
An even 7? All right.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good, you know, I would say a good mean of about 7 there between the three of us. I think that's a pretty decent score from the PopX, yeah. Team PopX.
Overall, it's pretty entertaining.
And I know that our man over here handling these screens, Mr. Mike Ippolito, he also saw the film today as well. But we'll bump heads and see what he thinks about it later on because he doesn't want to talk to us right now. But he's kind of busy. He's busy. All right, so we got a few Easter eggs that we're going to show as we're wrapping up the end of this week's show on episode 27, and we're going to do these Easter eggs for you just in order here. One of the famous scenes that the Joker and Harley Quinn share a dance. Now we're going to go through these one by one, and these are really cool. Austin, I'll let you go next, and Lindsay, right after that, we'll just repeat. Because we're getting a little crunchy on time here, but this should be instantly familiar to fans, as it obviously recreates the cover of Paul Denis' Batman Harley Quinn. That was illustrated by the legendary artist, Mr. Alex Ross. And seeing it in live action, no matter how brief, proves to be, honestly, awesome. A real treat. And so we got to see Harley Quinn dressed up in her costume, and her and the Joker prancing around in a dark-lit room. It was awesome.
It was absolutely epic. That was my favorite parts in the movie that I didn't get to mention. Angelo Murty. So during one of the flashbacks, which introduces us to Deadshot, we see the villain telling one person who's hired him, identified only as Angelo, that he won't work until he's paid. Twice. The assassin gets away and performs the hit after netting a cool $2 million. That's pretty solid. But who exactly is the mobster with some pretty serious sounding connections in Gotham City? Well, looking at the comic books, chances are that it is Angelo Murty, a member of the Falcone crime family, who is most often seen serving as a bodyguard for Sophia Gigante, the daughter of the sinister Carmine Falcone. It was one of my favorites in the Dark Knight trilogy.
That was a really good scene.
Cool.
Yes, that was cool.
That was a great scene.
Yes.
Well, the next one is a nod to John Ostrander. John Ostrander didn't create the Suicide Squad as such, but in the same way we have Stan Lee to thank for Captain America we have today, so too does this comic book writer deserve an awful lot of credit, as well as inspiring a number of key moments in the movie, one of which we'll get to in the next slide. Ostrander is the man who took this team of monster hunters and made them in the criminal task force they are now famous for being.
And we talked about this one. Actually, Austin alluded to this one earlier. Slipknot's demise. Around the time that he was hired, I know, sweet Lord Jesus. Around the time he was hired to take the helm of Suicide Squad, David Ayer got fans excited by tweeting out photos of stacks of comic books that he had been reading to prepare for the movie. Among them has been 1989's Suicide Squad number 9, as he recreates a key moment with Captain Boomerang and Slipknot on the big screen, almost word per word, verbatim.
Nice.
Okay, Between the Sheets. One of the most peculiar moments in Suicide Squad comes when the Enchantress shows the members of Task Force Eggire. This was a great scene, by the way, I think. And Harley Quinn ends up seeing herself in a very normal-looking Joker living a happy life with their two children. However, rather than referencing that in the movie's final scene, which is clearly a result of reshoots, the villain can be seen sitting in her cell reading a trashy erotic romance novel called Between the Sheets.
Interesting. Between the Sheets is actually a story. I did a little research on this particular book. It's a story of how a woman gives up her job and follows her love and her love is in the world of crime.
Oh.
That's this. That's a quick synopsis of it. Of Between the Sheets. Synopsis of Between the Sheets. Yeah.
Well, next up we have the Joker's Golden Gun. When the Joker goes to rescue Harley Quinn, he guns down the Argus soldiers with a gold-plated machine gun, featuring some pretty cool-looking ivory detailing. It's the kind of weapon you'd expect a version of the clown prince of crime to have, like this to have,
I like
especially.
That.
I do too, especially as he's the most gangsta take on the iconic villain to date. However, it seems like this choice of gun could be a callback to a previous David Ayer movie, as Michael Pena's character in End of Watch discovers one which looks almost identical during a traffic stop there. That too is gold with the same white detailing and is. And it's entirely possible that they are one and the same. Other than using a few actors who appeared in his previous movies, this is the biggest nod to Ayer's past work and nice Easter egg for fans of his back catalog.
The golden gun with the ivory trim.
That's a pretty sexy gun.
Now, we were talking about this a little earlier. This is Incubus, the brother of the Enchantress. Now, is not only... This is my commentary, so forgive me if you don't agree with this. Not only is it a horrible CGI character, but it's one of the worst comic book villains ever. He's never actually named in the Suicide Squad comics.
Really?
Because he was a last-minute addition and reshoots. No, he was never actually named. Let me rephrase that. He was never actually named in the movie.
Okay.
So
yes, he was not.
But in the comics, he was. But looking at the source material, chances are that he is, in fact, Incubus.
It makes sense.
Okay.
Jeez. That villain. Goodness gracious.
Good Lord.
So moving on to Harley Quinn's New 52 origin. Harley Quinn's origin story has been heavily edited down in the Suicide Squad, more than likely as a way of making her relationship with the Joker less abusive. We see very little of the Clown Prince of Crime using electroconductive therapy to break her mind, while a scene burned down on a motorbike only to be slapped across the face, which was featured heavily in set photos, has completely vanished, among many other scenes.
Hmm.
However,
I wonder.
Harley taking a dip in that vat in Ace Chemicals is very similar to her origin story in the New 52 universe, despite the Joker... the Joker actually forcibly throws her in the comic books to complete Dr. Harley Quinzel's transformation. So in the comics, he throws her into the vat?
Mm-hmm.
That's epic.
Yes,
in the movie, she actually volunteered to do
she,
it.
She
so.
Dives herself, and then he goes in after. Yeah.
I don't think they wanted to deal with the feminist issues.
Would you?
To be honest.
Would you?
No.
Seriously, girlfriend, would you want to deal with all that? Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
I'll just have my Rice Krispie treated over here, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-mm. No way. All right. Moving right along. The fastest man alive. Now, I did notice this one. In a blink, if you blink, you'll miss this one. Because in just a quick moment, the Flash makes an appearance to take down Captain Boomerang during a diamond heist. The villain literally just stabbed his accomplice That's in cool. the back with a boomerang, of course. And the Scarlet Speedster shows up in full costume to point out that there's clearly no honor among thieves before taking down the bemused Boomer in electrifying fashion. Now, I really enjoyed that little bit.
That was great.
I kind of liked it. I'm kind of glad that they did throw in, like I said earlier, the Justice League tie-in, which kind of signifies. Mm-hmm. It feels more like a unified universe when they do those kind of things, and I'm glad that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Grant Gustin.
No, I noticed that too.
But it's okay.
I was like, wait a minute, that's not the same guy.
It's all right. I'm still getting used to it.
Hey,
all right,
Joe.
Yes, sir.
Joe, you know, there's a rumor that Zack Snyder actually directed that scene. He was actually on set and directed that scene.
Hmm.
Well, that's pretty cool if it was.
That's
nice.
But, you know, that's cool.
Awesome. Well, we have one final Easter egg, and that's going to wrap up episode number 27, the Suicide Squad movie review and more. Batman versus Amanda Waller. Suicide Squad number 10, issue number 10, features one of the most memorable moments from that series when Batman comes face to face with the wall. Thinking he has the upper hand on Amanda Waller, the Caped Crusader threatens to expose Task Force X unless she shuts it down. But the villain quickly turns the table when she reveals that she knows Batman's secret identity and will expose it if he doesn't back down. Well, in the film, we actually get to see a scene almost identical to this play out on the Suicide Squad film. Though the Justice League setup is added as Bruce Wayne obtains files on Barry Allen and Arthur Curry, a.k.a. Aquaman, in exchange for helping to cover up Waller's role in the Midway City disaster. So that's kind of cool that we see a reference in that. And that is the post-scene credits that Austin was referring to earlier in the show. So that's that little trinket broken down for you.
Speaking of Batfleck, before we move on really quickly, I didn't see any Ben Affleck name in the credits. Did you know this? Because the majority of the appearances of Batman was by stunt people.
Really?
Huh. Wow.
If you look in the credits at the end of the movie, because I checked, because I read this on the internet, and it was not there. And if I'm wrong, somebody please correct me. You can hit me up on the interwebs, but I did not see Ben Affleck's name in the
ending. Well, most of the action scenes was filmed with his stunt double, and there was only like two very quick scenes that actually had Batfleck in it. So
I didn't see the Flash in there either.
Interesting. Wow. Well, guys, that wraps us up for this week. We have a really cool show. We'll tell you about that here in just a little bit coming up next week. But if you go out and see Suicide Squad this week, or you have an idea for a show, or you want to be a guest on PopX, you want to help get your brand, your craft, your art, your comic brand, whatever it is out there. Like last week, we talked to Enrique Benacourt, and he is doing his own comic book universe, which is really cool. If you're doing something cool like that, let us know. Pick up the phone and dial 850-417-7679. And for all you geeks out there, that's 850-417-POP-X. What in the world? You serious, Mike? Oh, my God, dude. I don't know where
that's
you...
That's fantastic. I hope everybody runs to the phones like that.
Oh, my gosh. That's like a Mel Brooks film going wrong.
Mike.
Fantastic.
He's awesome.
Say a word to make his presence known.
I know, man. He's boom sauce.
This is why we keep him around.
I know, man.
Oh, my goodness. We are also part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com. And please check out some more amazing podcasts on our home network. They're awesome.
Yes, that is so true. And you also can follow us over on social media, which is Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Patreon, Twitter, Pinterest, all at PopXCast. You can email us, too. We have an official email address. That's popxcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from all of our amazing, faithful listeners. And also, for future or past shows, always check out our official website at www.popxcast.com. And I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. at Rotcav, R-O-T-C-A-V, over on the interwebs. And, of course, hats off to my amazing team that makes this thing all come together, Team PopX, Lindsay Badger down here in the corner. What's up, Lieutenant Badger? L-R, what is it? What's your Twitter handle?
L-R Badger.
All right. And then Austin, you are the Burkinator with a three, Burkinator.
At the Burkinator with the three instead of the E, son.
That's it, man. And also, I want to give a big love over here to the man doing all the slides, Mr. Mike Ippolito, doing the graphic love for us this week. Really?
Yeah.
That's
what's with the hand thing? Look at the hand. Look at his hand. He's got a Michael Jackson glove on. Wait, look at this. Wait. Look at this.
Morgan Freeman.
My name is Morgan Freeman. But,
Hello.
All right, so episode 28 is coming to you next week. We're going to be talking about the top 10 reboots, film franchise reboots, that worked.
Ooh.
Not the ones that flopped,
nice.
But the ones that worked. So we're going to be dissecting this. We have a really cool list. We've done our homework on this one. And also remember, for episode 29, we'll be broadcasting live from Crumb's World in Winter Garden, Florida. We will be at a comic book shop on Saturday, August the 20th. So it's going to be really cool. Come out and see us live in person if you're in the Orlando metro area. We'll be there from 2 to 5. in the afternoon, and they're going to be doing a really cool appreciation day for all the people that are in the custodial workforce, whether you work at McDonald's or you work in the fast food industry or you work at a hotel or whatever. Come out and you will get 10% off and a double stamp on your card. So it's going to be really cool.
Awesome.
And so check us out. And then episode 30, we'll be doing the History of Comics Part 3. And I wish I could tell you what I'm thinking about doing for 31, but I can't. So from all of us here at Team PopX, thank you so much. And we will see you next time on episode 28 next week.
From everyone here at PopXCast, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and don't forget to subscribe for more great content. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Lab, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on!